2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
DFS podcast presented to you by DFSArmy.com. If you like what you hear in this podcast, please check out the link in the description or go to DFSArmy.com and use promo code TACO at signup and receive a lifetime 20% off. So, this week we're headed to the Players Championship in Florida, and it's one of the strongest fields that we'll see all year. The field is pretty much set as a major, and the tournament is known as the fifth unofficial major, and it has the largest prize pool in all of golf. The Players takes place at one of the most popular, if not the most popular, golf course outside of Augusta, at TPC Sawgrass, which certainly has the most popular hole, hole 17, the Island Short Par 3, which you're definitely familiar with if you play Tiger Woods Golf, any of the old video games, because anytime you want to play an online match, by default, it was set at TPC Sawgrass, so that's where you played a large amount of your head-to-heads and whatnot. So the course is very well known. I think the whole 17 thing is always overblown, but something that's also gotten overblown in the coverage is how every time hole 17 comes up, the announcers will say, well, the hole 17 is very popular, but let's not forget about hole 18. That one's actually the hardest hole on the course. And they say that every single year. I bet you'll hear it this year. And while that is true, it's just kind of interesting to note how they say the same thing every single year. But they'll have a camera set up on the coverage. If you go on the website or watch PGA Tour Live or whatever, they'll have a specific feed just for hole 17 where you get to watch a few of them hit it in the water, but for the most part, it's actually a very short, very easy par 3. But if you look at the rest of the course, it kind of tells a tale in itself. It's actually this course has the third smallest greens on any course that they'll see this year. The greens are very tiny, and the rough is very tough and unforgiving. Driving accuracy is important here, and this actually plays as a less-than-driver course. It is a par 72, 72,000-yard course with four par 3s and four par 5s, so you'd figure that bombers would have an advantage here, because usually longer par 72s kind of go to the bombers. But it plays as a less-than-driver course because it's absolutely crucial to stay out of these very tough roughs. And when you're looking at the statistics that we're going to focus on this week, with the small greens, just statistically, people are going to miss the green more often than not. The green and regulation percentage last year was 64%, which is under average, and people try as hard as they can to just get the ball on the green because they don't want to have to deal with these roughs. So unlike other courses where they're playing a bit more for placement and can miss the green in that sense, people are just focused on hitting these tiny greens. They're pretty flat. They are Bermuda greens because it is Florida, and the stint meter's kind of slow at a 12.5. And while strokes gained approach would be the first thing that pops into your mind, it's always important every week, but I think it's actually a little bit less important here. I mean, it would be nice to hit the green more often and whatnot, but if everyone's going to be missing these smaller greens, strokes gained around the green, which is a stat that I largely ignore week to week, that's actually going to be pretty important here. Not as important as off the tee and approach the green, which are just much more important stats for predictability, but I'm going to kind of pay attention to stroke scanned around the tee a lot more because scrambling is just so important here. Everyone's going to miss the greens. They're going to need to scramble out. And as for putting, which I'd like to ignore as well outside of, you know, very strong cases like, you know, people that are just absolutely terrible at putting or really good at putting or have been really good at putting recently. With the kind of flat, kind of slow, kind of small greens, don't really care about putting much at all this week. People will score a lot here. If you look, it ranked in the top 15 in both eagle percentage and birdie percentage, and in the bottom 5 in par percentage, and in the top 10 in both double and triple bogey percentage. It was actually the fourth, or had the fourth most triple bogeys last year. And obviously the water comes into play a lot here, because it's not only that hole 17, but hole 18 just has water all through the left side. You've got other water holes or approaches over water. And you've also got these very long and windy bunkers just lined up next to the fairway. And all sorts of trees and whatnot. The fairways are skinnier, but they actually get a little bit wider as you hit the ball farther. So it kind of mitigates the whole driving distance, driving accuracy thing, but you still want to be very, very accurate, especially with less than a driver. But with all the scoring that's going to take place here, and with all the biggest names in golf being here, birdie or better percentage is a stat that we're going to focus on pretty heavily this week. You want them DraftKings points, especially on FanDuel. That's just absolutely crucial that you check out birdie or better percentage. As one of your top stats you're looking for there. But we want people who are going to be able to score, hit eagles on all these par fives. That's absolutely crucial. And as far as driving accuracy and driving distance goes, driving distance is a bonus. If you have total driving and can drive the ball far with some accuracy, that's a pretty big bonus. And if you're someone that has no accuracy whatsoever, like a Jason Day, I wouldn't sweat it too much, just because they will be going less than driver. Well, actually, Jason Day is a pretty bad example, because he doesn't like to go less than driver. But, I mean, he's the defending champion here, so kind of hard to doubt him here. But for the most part, as long as you've got reasonable strokes scanned off the tee, you're going to be fine here. I'm more concerned about your ability to scramble and your approach stats, as always. And I'm kind of putting a little bit more importance on adjusted stroke average and kind of these overall stats like stroke scan, tee to green, over the efficiency scoring projections that we set up each week. I mean, they're still important and nice to look at, but if you look at the whole setup here, it's kind of spread out. There aren't any ranges that are going to be key ranges this week. I mean, there are 3 par 4s that are just under 400 yards, which is kind of interesting, but that only really matters when it's those even shorter par 3 or par 4s that are drivable. But for the most part, the par 5s are split in distance. There's a really short and a really, really long par 3, and then a couple normal size par 3s. But it's a good overall test. You know, the holes aren't straightforward. You've got plenty of windy, you know, dog legs with hazards in certain spots, so, I mean, you will want to drive the ball with some sort of accuracy. It's just going to help you a lot with ball placement for the approach shot and being able to miss it correctly and all, but, you know, like I usually say, it's important every single week, but I'm more interested in being able to make a ton of birdies, a ton of eagles, and with it just being the cream of the crop, I mean, we know these players pretty darn well. We don't have to think too much into it. Course history here, there are a lot of course horses, sort of, but almost every course horse has a miscut to them. I know that, you know, pretty hard from last year when Stenson lost his super, super long, like 2-year spanning made cut streak. He ended up finishing almost last year. It can be a really tough course with some variance, so there are really no safe plays, and you'll want to hedge a lot this week. So, that pretty much wraps it up for the course breakdown. Definitely go on the website and check out the article written by Schnarr. He put out a little course breakdown with some picks on there, so definitely come check that out, dfsarmy.com. But on to the player picks. Up top, you've got Dustin Johnson at 12,000 with 8-1 odds to win, so that's pretty fair. He came back last week after his withdrawal from the Masters, looking fine as ever. T2 finish, looked like he was going to take it on Sunday with a nice charge, but ended up coming a little short. My guy, Brian Harman, he brought it in last week. That was pretty awesome to watch, but nonetheless, Dustin Johnson, by far the world's number one golfer. Like, his points in the official world golf ratings are just off the charts on this point. So much more than everyone else. I think he has like 13 official points, as where Rory at number 2 has like 8. So, definitely the best player in the world, but he has really poor course history here. Last year he had a T28, nothing special, but that was actually his best finish of the last decade. Now, he hasn't missed any cuts. He did withdraw in 2013, but he's had like T69, T59, T57, even a 79th place finish in 2009. Like, he doesn't really do anything on the weekends here. He's never in contention. But his game is elevated quite a bit, obviously, as he's the best golfer in the world now. So it's hard to really doubt him. It seems like he could just get into a lot of trouble with him, you know, not wanting to give up the driver ever, since it's his best weapon. But it's really hard to doubt the guy at this point. And the play really has to be made on ownership here. He's going to be popular. He's always popular. But I think Rory McIlroy, just underneath him, is going to take so much of his ownership that it won't be overbearing this week. I don't think he breaks 30%, but he'll probably stay around where he was last week in the high 20s. Onto Rory McIlroy there. He's finished in the top 10 at this tournament 4 straight times, giving a little wiggle room for last year's T12. Still, great course history here after a streak of missed cuts back 2012 and beyond. But just recently been awesome here. Been awesome on the year. He has not finished outside of the top 10 at all so far this year. Rory McIlroy, when he plays, he's in contention. Just every time he plays, every time he tees it up, he's Rory McIlroy. He has a video game named after himself. The weird thing about him is, statistically, he looks exactly the same as Dustin Johnson. Same strengths, same weaknesses, just a little bit less good at putting compared to DJ, but pretty much an identical play, with better course history here, by a long shot. Odds aren't too far off at 12-1, and we really haven't seen Rory win. I think the last time he won was the Wells Fargo a couple years ago. But at least on the American Tour. He's won on Europe a few times, but those don't really count, do they? Nonetheless, Rory McIlroy, he's going to be popular. He saves so much money from DJ. And you're going to kind of need it a little bit this week, since they upped the minimum price from $6,000 to $6,500. And with the field being a little stronger here, there is obviously softer pricing and a lot of value down low. But still, Rory McIlroy just looks so tempting. People will see 4 out of 4 cuts made, all in the top 10, and just lock him in as they probably should, but he'll be popular. Will he be more popular than DJ? Maybe. I think they'll be around the same. I would probably lean Rory, but it's going to depend on how they're touted throughout the next few days. Right underneath them, Jordan Spieth. He has missed 2 cuts here in a row, but did start off his career here with a 4th place finish in 2014. He's been kind of flying under the radar a little bit this season, I guess. A win early on, missed the cut at Houston, did pretty well in the Masters, but he was not in contention on Sunday, really. Put the ball in the water in hole 12 last we saw him, so he was just kind of having a fun time not being in contention, just chilling in Augusta. Has taken a break since, as a lot of the people in the field have. There are so many people in the field that, you know, with the higher, the bigger names, they've all taken a few weeks off. They're like, the Masters, you know, let's just chill until the Players, then get paid, then go on our merry way, you know, preparing for the upcoming major season after the U.S. Open. But Jordan Spieth, it's hard to really doubt him here. It seems like his game would fit perfectly. You know, he's usually a good scrambler, short game, long enough off the tee. Actually, with the field-adjusted statistics in the cheat sheet, he actually ranks 0.00 in driving distance. So, on average, he is the exact field average week to week, and just slightly under average in accuracy. The driver has not been his strong suit so far this year, but a lot more accurate than the likes of Rory and such. And that short game is there. He's usually in contention every time he tees it up, and he leads the efficiency scoring projections by a long shot, actually. Very good at those shorter par fours. He won't be very popular, and there's not a ton of reason to really like him a whole lot. At 10,800, he's more intriguing on FanDuel, where he's only 9,700. Up next on the docket, we have Sergio, who just won the freaking Masters, and he's quite the course horse here. Last year, he broke his streak of top 10 finishes with a T54. Wasn't in the best form last season, but the dude looks incredible. He is an absolute steal on FanDuel at 9,200. Priced pretty fairly on DraftKings for a guy that's wearing the green jacket and all. Statistically looks great, but we don't have the biggest sample size, and a lot of that sample size... actually, never mind. They did not record any stats for the Masters because they hate me. But his statistics look good. Smaller sample size than, you know, Spieth and DJ, but they look pretty good overall. Pretty much everything above average outside of approach, and obviously he's a bad putter. Don't mind him at all, but he's going to be a super chalky play on FanDuel, but he's really smart, awesome for cash games there. Lock him in. Freaking course horse here, doesn't miss the cut. Very safe for cash games, really on both sides, but I wouldn't go too heavy on him because there's no real reason to. Jason Day at 10,000. 10,300 on FanDuel seems like a very easy fade there. He's projected on our Domination Station projections as the worst value of any of these studs by quite a bit. He is the defending champion here, and he's looked good the last few times he's been out. Just statistically, just looks really, really bad. Has missed the cut here plenty of times. Terrible, terrible driving accuracy. His strokes gained tee to green is like field average, as were everyone else in this 8,000 plus range. All have strokes gained tee to green of like 1, 2, if not 3 standard deviations above field average, and Jason Day is just right there at field average. He had a crappy start to the season, so that might explain a little bit of it, but he hasn't really shown much so far this season. He's not the number one player in the world anymore. He's fallen off, but if there was a spot for him to come back strong, it would be here. So I'm not going to fade him by any means, and I don't think he'll be too popular. More popular than he has been. He's been very, very unpopular. And with him being a defending champion here, I could see him being a little more popular. Just people are going to be way more attracted to the likes of Sergio and Rory and DJ. So for Day, I like, but just as a sprinkle. A guy who I'm on a lot this week, Hideki Matsuyama. Great course history here. T7 last year. Every single time he's teed it up here, he's finished in the top 25. Looked really good at the Masters, tied with Jordan Spieth there, but kind of went under the radar a little bit still. He's been really good this season, and even though he was in a bit of a mini slump, it really wasn't that bad of a slump, like just finishing like 40th or whatever. But tee to green, the guy's awesome, but he's the best in the field at strokes gained around the green. Best in the entire field. Best of all of the studs outside of Rory and DJ in overall strokes gained tee to green. He had struggled with his approach game earlier in the season, but that's really turned around over the last few tournaments he's been in. Not a great putter, but I don't think that matters here. Love Hideki this week. I don't think he'll be popular. He was not popular at all in the Masters, coming in at around 11% owned when he was priced very fairly, and the guy $100 cheaper than him is going to suck all the ownership out of him. So, Hideki, I love a lot this week. Schnarr wrote him up in the article. Just awesome play for me. I'm going to go pretty overweight to the field. He is my guy up top this week. It's hard not to like some Rory and all that. I'll get sprinkles of everyone up here. But Hideki, I'm going to go the heaviest on. And I am going to continue to fade this man. But John Rahm at 9,600, just so supremely chalky every single week. Always over 30% owned, pushing 40% owned on DraftKings. 66% owned on the weekend slate last week. Just, oh my god, just he's so chalky. FanDuel, chalky. At least FanDuel priced him very correctly this week at over $10,000. But the dude is just an ownership magnet, and I keep wanting to get off of him. Because he's been so good this season, there's no real reason not to roster him outside of just his egregious ownership. But if you don't care how owned he is, the dude has been a monster. He's the next, like, big talent on tour. He's pretty much already a stud at this point and really belongs in the price range of these guys, if not higher. I wish they would just price him, like, $15,000 so we wouldn't have to deal with him every single week. But John Rahm, first time out here. His major weaknesses, though, if you could call them weaknesses, really he's just average at them, where he excels everywhere else. But his weaknesses would be driving accuracy and scrambling. And with those two things being important here, that's the reason I'm going with for fading him, or going underweight on him this week. But really, it's all just an ownership play. So that's Rahm for you. You could play him in cash and fade him in GPP. I say that's the move right there. A guy I like a lot, former winner here, but really bad course history outside of a win and a T2 in 2012. Like, if you get rid of those, terrible, terrible course history. That's Ricky Fowler at 9,300. The PGA Tour puts out a overall ranking, just a mixture of all their stats, just put into a model that spits out the ranking of the best overall player on the tour, and that is Ricky Fowler. He's been a beast this season. Very good at every single stat, like significantly above average in everything. Every tournament he's played in, he's been in contention. Tied with Spieth and tied with Matsuyama at the Masters with a T11, but he's gonna finish top five. Just faltered on that back nine on Sunday. Didn't look that great, but the dude's a beast. 9,300, that's really cheap for him. 9,400 on FanDuel, also not bad. Former winner here, just the only concern would be, outside of the win, the runner-up. He's got really, really bad course history. 4 missed cuts and a made cut, in which he finished last place overall, as far as the weekend guys go there, so no, that's the only real reason I can think to fade him. He looks awesome otherwise. Leads the tour in adjusted stroke average as well. By significant margin, he averages just under 69. And that's adjusted, so not even DJ can say that. Like Fowler a lot. Same price pretty much, 9,200. Justin Rose, someone that's been cash money all season long. Was right there with Sergio until the very end of that playoff. There's nothing not to like about Rose at all. Crap putter, but doesn't really matter here. Awesome tee to green. Your typical bomber type. Kind of up and down course history here, but a T4 in 2014. 19th last year. I like him. He's making a hell of a lot of cuts. Look better this year than in the couple of years past, so Rose is in a really good spot in here, and he's really cheap. Now, once we get past the $9,000 range here, you've got some really tough plays. The bottom part of the $8,000 range is really nice, but the guys in the top $8,000 range, they kind of create a salary island where you don't want to play any of these guys, really. You've got the first like big drop-off in super talent in Justin Thomas, who could very well do well here. He's just like, yeah, I've made a lot of lineups, and a lot of them leave me with like $9,000 left, and I'm like, do I pick Justin Thomas? He doesn't seem great. Like, I could get Rose if I just make a small adjustment, or Fowler, who I like a lot better. His odds drop-off is pretty significant, 29-1, where all the guys above him are 21-1. I did finish third last year, 24th the year before that, so good course history. It just feels like he kind of peaked a bit early. He finished top five in the WGC, but outside of that, hasn't really done a whole lot. Looked all right at the Masters, and that might be enough to assure me into using some of him. The only thing I really, really like about him is he has one of the best birdie or better percentages on tour. So I guess he could fit in a GPP roster as well. And that leads us to the bane of my existence, Henrik Stenson, who has now missed three cuts in a row in really, really bad fashion. He's a former winner here. Had great course history until last year, when, obviously, he broke his 30-made-cut streak and just busted it over his knee like a bad club, finishing plus 8, almost dead last, just looking awful. And he really kind of hasn't been the same since. Last season was outside of his amazing Open Championship. The last year or so for him has been kind of rough by his standards. Has made one cut this year. Hasn't played a ton, but I mean, he recently just played 5 tournaments in a row. Withdrew from one, finished 7th at the Valspar, which is nice, and then just missed cut. Missed the cut at the Masters. I love my man. He's fit for this course. He's far and away the best, like the most accurate driver of the ball of anyone in this entire range. Not a distance guy, but his driving accuracy is elite, and it always has been. Almost always leads the tour in driving accuracy. And his approach game, always solid. His scrambling game, solid. Like, he fits this course perfectly. This course was made for Henrik Stenson. Less than driver? Who's the best at less than driver? The dude never uses a driver. He always uses 3-wood. And he's deadly with it. The problem is his irons have just not been there recently. He's putting like crap. I mean, he always kind of putts like crap, but he's really been putting like crap outside of the Valspar. Would love to be on my guy. This is I think he was like one of the most expensive players in the field here last year, because he was just such a money pick. And I made the mistake of going all in on him, thinking, okay, the guy's made a bajillion cuts in a row. This is one of his best courses. Lock him in. But I learned the hard way that you do not do that here. Of everybody in the, everyone 8,000 or above that has played this course has a missed cut in the last decade, outside of Dustin Johnson, who's had a few performances that were basically a miscut, like had negative DraftKings points on the weekend. So, outside of John Rahm, and actually outside of Hideki Matsuyama and Justin Thomas, I did overlook those guys a little bit, but for the most part, like 19 of 21 guys have missed cuts outside of generally good, you know, course history. So this course will get you. You'll be doing fine, and then 2 holes later, you go plus 5 in 2 holes, and you're like, what happened? You just splash it on 17, and splash it on 18. It happens. This is a very high variance course, so for the domination station this week, I would recommend either going 20, 25, or 30% max exposure across the board, maybe manually bumping it up to like 30%, 40% for guys that you really, really like. I'm not big on doing my usual thing where I pick a few players to go very heavy on, because anyone can eat shit this week. It can happen, and no one's going to own Stenson. He's going to be like 3% owned. Maybe a little bit more because of the course history here, and there might be some other sadistic nihilists out there like me that just love pain and are going to keep rostering Henrik. But smart players won't play him. I will. Be it as it may, he's going to be super low owned. Brooks Koepka also probably going to be... Well, he's always owned. People love Brooks Koepka. 8,600, 8,400 on FanDuel. Very overpriced here, I think. Not as overpriced as Chapel underneath him, but very overpriced. Like, a higher salary than Adam Scott. That makes no sense. He finished second in Texas, which was great, but had a crap start to the season. Absolute crap start to the season. We saw him in the $6,000 range just a few tournaments ago. Quick turnaround for him. Still a top 20 player in the world and all, but very quick salary turnaround for him on both sides. Brooks is a guy that, well, he's one of the guys I would primarily think of when it comes to birdie or better kind of courses. You know, he scores a lot of DraftKings points. He doesn't par. So that's a good reason to play him. And maybe the, you know, maybe the price will keep his ownership down a little bit, but like I said, he's on that island where nobody wants to play Stenson. No one wants to play Chapel, even though he just won. And maybe they do want to play Chapel. I don't know. He's actually looking pretty good recently, but people just like Koepka, so they're going to play him. I'm not going to play him. Chapel actually did finish T2 here last year, so there might be a strong case to play him. For me, it's very simple. He is $6,700 on FanDuel. So, all in? Pretty much all in. Like, the only hedge you really need is you can hedge him between your round 1 and 2 lineups and your round 3 and 4 lineups, but that pricing is just wrong. I found that FanDuel, they just barely change their salaries on players week to week, so you'll be rostering the same guys, like, over and over and over. Chapel's going to be one of those guys until they price him correctly. $6,700 is just crazy. He'll help you afford your Rorys, your Spieths, your DJs. So that's the plan with him. It's very simple. Just play him on FanDuel. Adam Scott, play him on DraftKings. He's so underpriced on DraftKings. It's crazy. He's a course horse here. 5 cuts in a row, T12 last year. The dude's good. Looked pretty good last week. Really good final round. Like Scott a lot. Not too much to say, just he's good. Paul Casey at 8,300. He's been really good. His form is awesome. 8,300 is cheap for him. He's more expensive on FanDuel, so play him on DraftKings. Really nice price. And at 8,200, Russell Henley, you play him on FanDuel. It's very, very simple. You can play him on DraftKings, too. He's not actually a bad value. His form is awesome. 5 straight made cuts. More than that, actually. Just he really ain't been missing cuts at all this year, which is strange because he loves to miss cuts usually. Won back in Houston, top 10 at Valspar. Finished T11 at the Masters. Just really, really nice play. 6,800 on FanDuel is crazy. And 8,200 on DraftKings is fair. Then last week's surprise top 2 finisher, Pat Perez, hasn't missed a cut all year, I don't think. I think he just has a withdrawal. T17 last time he played here. Patty P, I like you a lot. Awesome scrambler. His driving game is definitely to be desired, but good putter. Good scrambler, just good short game. I think he'll be fine. And a guy I was absolutely not on last week, and thankfully he blew up before he screwed me over a lot by winning, but not Pat Perez, my bad. Other Pat, Patrick Reed, at 8,000, 8,200 on FanDuel. He's kind of really cheap now, and he missed the 3 cuts in a row. Was looking just awful. Very low owned. But T12 last week at Wells Fargo. So, $8,000 even more expensive on FanDuel. Well, don't play him on FanDuel, but, you know, have shares on DraftKings. He might be out of his slump, and he's a really good scrambler, really good putter. Actually has looked a little bit better tee to green, but he's still bad. He's just not a great ball striker. So he will find his way into trouble a lot, and his odds to pricing actually is just really, really bad compared to some of the guys around him. Like, Casey is 300 more than him, or 200 more than him, and his odds are 40-1, as where Reed is like 70-1. And right underneath him is Matt Kuchar, who's 50-1, so don't really like him a whole lot, but if he's out of his slump, he's actually kind of cheap for who he is. Matt Kuchar, 7,900 on DraftKings, is pretty crazy. Awesome, awesome course history here. He did miss the cut in 2015, but last year, third. Won in 2012. Never really missed the cut outside of that. In the last decade, he has 5 top 17 finishes, so great course history. The dude's a cut maker. Play him in cash. Very easy play. And right underneath him, pretty much the same thing. Jason Duffner, good course history, lots of made cuts, has missed one cut in the last, like, year and a half, 2 years. 7,800, and especially 7,100 on FanDuel, play him in cash, play him in round 3 and 4, although he does tend to perform better in round 1 and 2 and kind of snooze on the weekends, but still, the dude's awesome. 3 of his last 4 tournaments, he's finished top 12. Dude's a beast, play him, especially on FanDuel. And one of my favorite plays. Really, I just love this entire range. It's awesome. 7,700. Dude that could have won it for me last week, but faded off a bit on the weekend. Francesco Molinari. 7,700 and 7,600 on FanDuel. I'm all over him on both sides. Love the dude. The dude is on a tear. He's made like 20 cuts in a row on both tours. Dude's a beast. Dude never finishes outside the top 25. Love him, love him, love him. One of the best approach games in the entire field. And I do believe he is top 2. If you get rid of the scrubs, really, he's the best in the field at driving accuracy. Absolutely love him. His putter has been the garbage can, but don't care. Love Francesco Molinari. He's one of my top plays of the week. Right underneath him, got screwed a bunch of people last week who I knew I shouldn't have played. He was going to be high-owned, but Kevin Kisner also missed the cut here last year after a second-place finish in 2015. I knew I should have gotten off at Kisner kind of after the fact because when he went to that playoff the week before, he had played until Monday, and the only reason I went in on him was because Berger at around the same price was getting a lot of hype, and I thought that would have taken away from Kisner's ownership, but he was still very popular, and I went down with the rest of the field there. But 7,700, outside of last week, the dude has been awesome. He's a great play, but there's so many great plays in this range, it's hard to count them all. Patrick Cantlay, $6,000 on FanDuel, but 7,700 on DraftKings. Seems pretty easy. 2 top 3 finishes in his last 3 events. The dude's got a small sample size, but so far it's looking really, really good. The dude's looking like the stud that we were promised with him. Love him a lot on FanDuel. Put him in most of my lineups. The dude's awesome. The only thing I worry with him is he hasn't been in a field like this before, but the dude's throwing up top 5 upside. You gotta like him. So, Patrick Cantlay, long driver of the ball with some accuracy. Good overall game, really no weaknesses, great putter. Like him a lot. And speaking of putting, the best putter in the field, perhaps, Tyrrell Hatton, who screwed everyone at the Masters, so no one's gonna own him. 7,600 on DraftKings, though. Like him a lot. One of the best in the field in the efficiency scoring projections. And pretty good adjusted stroke average, too. Dude's a boss. Top 20 in the world. Love some Hatton. And love him a ton more than the other guys his price. The other guys' prizes have been so freaking frustrating. And both are traps, I think. They have terrible, terrible, terrible form, but have recently performed pretty well in their last, like, one or two events, and that would be Russell Knox and Ryan Palmer. I'd be more inclined to use Knox, who just finished T11 at the RBC, along with Palmer, because his course history here is actually really nice. Couple of top 20 finishes in a row, has never missed the cut. Palmer's missed the cut here a lot, finished T5 in 2012, or 2013, and he's actually coming off of two good finishes here. Sixth in Texas, which he was a course horse at. So, not too interested in that. Not entirely swayed yet, but also T11 there in RBC. One more from Palmer, and I'm officially on him, but I will proceed with caution here, because the dude's missed a lot of cuts here. And there's just so many plays in this range I like a ton better. And a few of those include a ridiculously underpriced Phil Mickelson, who's going to be chalk. And it's going to be a very interesting situation here, because he's missed four cuts in a row here. The dude is one of the best scramblers in the world, but he absolutely gets into a lot of trouble here and pays the price, so I don't think I'm going to take the bait. I like FanDuel a lot this week because they priced him at 8,700 compared to DraftKings 7,400, so no baiting there. DraftKings is like, come on, take the bait, take the bait. I'm not really biting. I'll have a few shares, but I'm not biting. Lee Westwood at 7,500, not bad. Tommy Fleetwood has actually proved himself in some very strong fields outside of the Masters at 7,500. He's not bad. Louis Oosthuizen hasn't missed a cut on the season. Not bad either, so plenty of options. You don't have to go with any of the guys you're not totally sure about. Tony Finau, who was some crazy chalk last week, or the last time that he was out, Texas, he's been looking really, really good. But it's just such a strong field, I don't really want to use him. I'll use him on FanDuel, where he's only 7,000, but don't know if he'll be popular again with all the other names in the field, but he's always over-owned for the value he represents. Bill Haas, Billy Horschel, like the Bills here at 7,400. But the main play in this little range here, once you get into the lower $7,000, there are really two. There are two very, very, very strong plays. There's some absolute course horses that have made every cut on the decade, both of them. And that is Martin Kaymer, who has not missed a cut in 29 events played over the last, like, year and a half since the Masters 2 years ago. Like, the dude is a champ. He's awesome. He's won here before in 2014. 7,300. Much more appropriately priced on FanDuel, but I might still play him there. Love the dude a lot. He's going to be popular, but he's also going to be one of those players that I will play overweight on the field, even though he's popular. You know, adjust his exposure percentage up to like 40%. Almost 50%, because the dude's awesome and seriously underpriced. Love Kaymer a lot. And Zach Johnson at 7,200. We have not been on this guy at all whatsoever this year because he's been crap. But top 20 finish last week, looking promising. His game fits the course really well. And awesome, awesome, awesome course history. Top 25s all over the place. He was top 26 6 years in a row until last year, when he posted a T54. Not the greatest, but still, the dude's a solid, solid cut maker here. He's got the exact course fit we're kind of looking for. And he's not, like, as short off the tee as people give him credit for. So, like him a lot. And Mr. Trickster himself, maybe it's a little mean, but Jimmy Walker, he announced he had Lyme disease. And so we got off of him completely, and then he posts a 13th place finish in Texas, so I don't know about him. He's missed the last two cuts here, but finished T6 in 2014. He's just an up in the air play, and you don't really have to make those kind of calls with all the value that's in the same range, like with Zach Johnson being the same price. So I'll pass on you, buddy. The other plays I like in this range, Charles Schwartzel at 7,100. Awesome, awesome. Just ball striking. always good at approach, but one of the best in the entire field at driving accuracy. And his odds to pricing is really off. Has made 4 cuts in a row. It looked amazing on Sunday at the Masters. Like, he came out of nowhere, post a 3rd place finish. Love me some Schwartzel. The dude's generally a very strong cut maker. He's pretty solid. Ryan Moore at 7,000. This is the cheapest we've seen this dude in a long time. Not the greatest course history here. Missed 3 cuts in the last 4 years, but he's been solid since, like, the FedEx Cup playoffs, really. Dude's been a top 10 beast. Just always there. Not exactly in contention to win, but always just up there in the leaderboards. Posting a pretty good score. Maybe not the best at getting, like, birdies, but very solid. Play him in cash. And that's really all the guys I'm interested with in this kind of $7,000 range. It's kind of time to dip our toes into the $6,900 to minimum priced range, where Cameron Smith, the winner along with Jonas Blixt of the Zurich Classic, and the new tandem setup, doesn't show on DraftKings, but he won there, and he finished 6th in Texas, and he's made almost every cut this year, so the dude's on a roll. Very, very underpriced on FanDuel at $6,300, so great play on both sites. Love his course fit here as well. And Wesley Bryan, same thing. Very accurate, very good putter. Yeah, good efficiency scoring. Great upside, obviously, with the win at the RBC and a top 10 at Valspar. Also has another top 10 on the year. He did miss the cut last week, but it wasn't really a good course for him. 6,100 on FanDuel, that's a mighty fine value. And Brandon Steele, who's got Steele in his name, at 6,900, who's yet to miss a cut this year. That is a steal, but it's very important to note that his course history is absolutely garbage. But if you ignore that, you know, he is a very good birdie or better percentage. Great par 5 scoring, one of the best in the efficiency scoring projections on the week, so not too worried about it. Just proceed with caution, just because he really does suck here outside of a T26 finish in 2014. Lots of miscuts. No one else I'm really too interested in. Maybe Gary Woodland. We haven't really seen him much outside of him barely missing the cut at the Masters. Started the season off awesome. You know he puts up a lot of birdies, and you know he can, when he clubs down, he's really awesome. So he might be a very interesting play at 6,900, but once you get to 6,800 and below, that's where the real value comes in. Mark Leishman at 6,800 is like a what kind of play? I think he's projected as the highest value on the domination station. His odds are, there are 4 guys here in the $6,800 range that are under 100-1. And being surrounded by guys with like 500-1 odds. It's crazy. Mark Leishman, awesome play. Doesn't miss cuts. Just won at the Arnold Palmer. Great course history as well. Brian Harman, who just won last week and is getting no love. T8 finish here in 2015. Awesome tee to green. The dude's been posting top 10 finishes like crazy. Either he's top 10 or he missed the cut, so he's the definition of a GPP play. So I always play him every week because he has that upside, and last week was just one of those weeks where that really worked out for me at a very, very, very low ownership. He won't be low-owned anymore, but like Harman, just because of that upside in GPP. And Adam Hadwin, who has yet to miss a cut this year, 10 for 10. He's going to be so chalk because people see perfect on the cuts made and they roster him. That's just what happens. There's such a direct correlation with ownership there. It's nuts. Statistically, actually doesn't look great at all, but the finishes and the cuts made have been there. So maybe play him in cash and fade him in GPP. Then the guy with the best odds in this range and by far the best world golf ranking, I'll actually scratch that, outside of Norin, who's really just up in the world golf rankings because he's won a lot in Europe and screwed me over last week. But nonetheless, here, Brennan Grace, 6,800, that's just kind of a head-scratching price there. A few top 10s in a row on tour. He's looking pretty good. Made every cut here in three attempts. Like him a lot. And finally, in this $6,800 range, Bernd Weisberger, who just won in China and followed that up with a fourth-place finish at the Volvo in China. So, if this was in China, I know exactly who I'd be taking, but the thing about Weisberger, I think that's how you say it, Bernd Weisberger, the thing about him is he's always just kick-ass in Euro. Like, if he's playing in Euro, you roster him. And for some reason, the field wasn't until he got that win. He was very chalky then, so it was kind of disappointing, but the dude's a beast in Europe. When he comes to America, he has yet to really show that upside. Obviously, the field's harder, and the field's going to be much harder here, but he did make the cut last year, and his last few times out at the Masters and at the Shell Houston Open, he did pretty well. He made the cut at the Masters, top 25 at Houston. He's going to have that, like, breakout huge finish eventually. I just see it coming from him. He's so good. Like, he didn't just win in China. He ran away with it. He's had several rounds on the season where he's posted, like, bogey-free 9-unders. Like, the dude has that upside in him. I'm just waiting for it to come in America. I will keep rostering the guy. And I love how underpriced he is. Also, very, very fairly priced on FanDuel at $6,300. And at $6,800 as well, J.B. Holmes, who's $8,000 on FanDuel, but also a solid play there. I mean, very high upside. It's just he's going to get in trouble here, I think. He's missed three of his last four cuts, and the one cut he made, not that great. Only a 50th place finish there, but J.B. Holmes, if it was a different course, I would like him a lot more, but I don't think he really fits here. And I might as well talk about Alexander Noren, who didn't exactly, like, screw me. He did pretty well, finished top 25, or finished T31 last week. But the dude was in the final pairing. He was T2 in a lineup I had where everyone is in the top 10. I thought I was going to bank big last week. Was in the top 10 in GPPs and all of that, but he just looked absolutely terrible. Just so terrible on Sunday. It's going to be hard for me to roster him again with too much confidence, but dude's still a beast. Just he was going to show it, but he still hasn't shown it in America. He's very frustrating there, but down to the $6,700 range, there's a little more value. Graham McDowell, who was the top projected value last week and ended up with a top 20 finish, could have been better, but he also kind of faded off a little bit on Sunday. Good course history here, finished 9th last year, has just made so many cuts. I think he's 9 for 10 on the season. Very good play, awesome driving accuracy, very short off the tee, but you know, he's the ball striker type. So at 6,700, I like him a lot. Love Kyle Stanley at 6,700, and especially at 5,500 on FanDuel. That's really nice. Kyle Stanley withdrew from the last tournament. We were going to go in on him, but he withdrew. Nonetheless, like him a lot. And that's pretty much it. Maybe take a shot at Blix because he just won, but not much outside of there. I guess play Jim Herman on FanDuel at 4,700. One of the best in the field at driving accuracy and greens and regulation, so could be interesting there. And onto the $6,600 range, which a lot of people are bunched up at the bottom because it's not stretching down to 6,000. So you have a ton of these $6,700, $6,600, $6,500 guys. But out of the $6,600 range, it's very obvious who the best value is. That is Ross Fisher, who's actually missed the last three cuts here. But they were back in like 2011, 2010, 2009, when he played on the PGA Tour a lot more before really going to Europe full-time. He was one of the best European golfers. And he's really known for being a super steady cut maker. But the last time we saw him at strong field events in America, which, you know, unlike guys like Noren and Weisberger, he won't just come over for, like, random tournaments, you know, after staying for, like, a WGC or whatever. He just comes here for the big money tournaments. That's what he's about. He's about that bread. And We saw him come top five at the WGC Mexico, and at the Masters, made the cut, finished T41, not the greatest, but hey, he made the cut at the Masters, that's always a good thing. The dude's 6,600, just such a mispricing here for what he's capable of. He's gonna chill, make the cut, maybe finish like 30th. That should be fine for 6,600, almost minimum price. The only other person in this price range I like is Steve Stricker, who's like, he's Steve Stricker. Use him to describe a play style to people. Like Steve Stricker, Jim Furyk, Matt Kuchar, you know, short off the tee, very, 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 very accurate, which is important here. Good green regulation, great putter, one of the best putters ever. At 6,600, we will take that, and his course history is pretty good. Made five of the last six cuts. And down to the bottom of the barrel, where, unlike some weeks, there really aren't a lot of good plays. There are a lot of, like, legitimate bad guys who just, like, won a tournament in the last 2 years, and that's the only reason they're here. But in this range, I guess I like Kevin Streelman some, and the one that people gravitate to here at the bottom of the barrel, Zach Blair, who's made a lot of cuts recently, finished 8th at Houston and T12 last week at Wells Fargo. I don't fall for David Toms. If you look on the cheat sheet and you see, oh, he's got 4 top 15 finishes, I would not buy that. He's missed a billion cuts in a row. Why he's not on the Champions Tour, or I think he is actually on the Champions Tour most of the time, but he still comes here. I think he's like a former winner from like the 90s or something, but don't play David Toms. Just don't. And, this range, you're pretty much going to want to just take flyers on guys who could possibly win, which there aren't a lot of. Fabian Gomez can certainly do that. He's got multiple wins in the last few years. KJ Choi has won this tournament, but he looks so bad outside of Riviera, so don't like him. The one other interesting play here would be, especially on FanDuel at 4,800, Alex Sejka, who just withdrew from the Wells Fargo, so might be a interesting thing to look out for there. I don't know why. I should know why. Something I should know, but he actually got disqualified from the Shell Houston Open. I should know that too, but I don't know. But the dude has 2 top 10 finishes here, and has only missed the cut once in the last decade. Could be a very interesting play. It's not like he's a guy that's fallen off or anything. He's just been kind of chilling, you know, making cuts every now and again, getting disqualified, withdrawing. Maybe he was like, eh, fuck it, I have a hangnail. Like, I bet you that PGA Tour golfers have withdrawn because of a hangnail, but they'll say it's like their back or something. But you cannot, I'm sorry to go on tangent here, but you really can't play with a hangnail. Last year I had a really bad hangnail, not like the worst, like I was ripping my thumb out or anything, but I just had a hangnail. I tried to play golf with my grandpa and it just did not work out. I was like, ah, it's so hard on the swing motion. So dude could have had a hangnail, and I will try to search that out for you guys. I'll look into why he withdrew. If it's not a hangnail, I'll let you guys know. But yeah, that'll pretty much do it, because we're pretty much talking crap now. If you're a teenage girl, maybe you can play Grayson Murray and then get hit on by him or something. Show him your lineup and be like, hey, made a bunch of money. Just show him on Twitter or whatever. Maybe he'll hit you up. But other than that, I'm done fucking around here. That is all for the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast. Remember, this shit's brought to you by DFSArmy.com. Come check us out. We're an awesome community. You know, we just crushed NASCAR over the weekend with our new domination station with Dominators in it. The only optimizer out there for NASCAR with Dominators taken into account. Very, very helpful tool that helped us just crush last week. We were all over all the leaderboards, so, you know, if you're looking at leaderboards, you saw those Army helmets everywhere. So come check us out, dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO. You can check out the link at the bottom of the iTunes or whatever you're looking at description. And yeah, they'll pretty much do it, so good luck, win a bunch of money out there, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.